Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. Welcome to a very special episode where we hosted a conversation together with the team of Fresh Ventures, a conversation where we dig deeper into what ventures need to be built, what ventures are we missing in the space of regenerative food and agriculture. We're going to do this more regularly, so enjoy.
Welcome everyone to the first Fresh Conversations that we're hosting. A little bit of background. My name is Bart van der Zande. I'm one of the co-founders of the Fresh Venture Studio, the organization that set this up. We are a startup studio on a mission to a regenerative and circular food system. We intend to build multiple new steward-owned organizations to help the transition, accelerate the transition to a regenerative food system. And in that context, we are continuously looking and getting into conversations on what are the actual problems or where are the opportunities that would require more attention from entrepreneurial teams and talent to work on, what would really help the ecosystem forward in bringing about this more regenerative food system. Koen van Seijen, one of the co-hosts today, is someone we talk a lot with on this subject, and we really like his podcast as well. For those who don't know it, Investing in Regenerative Agriculture podcast, really a lot of great conversations on this subject, and we decided to start hosting sort of open conversations about specifically what are potential opportunities that would need more entrepreneurial energy, I would say, or what are problems that are still very hard to solve that could really deserve some additional attention from maybe a different type of people that are working on it right now. So that is sort of the central question today. Sort of on the technical part, I would like to invite you all very much to contribute. There is no set program for this conversation. So please share your thoughts as well, your questions, things you want to bring into this group of people. I think it's an interesting group. So do so. If you want to say something, I would like to ask you to make it a little bit civilized to add a comment in the chat, and then we'll make sure that the people get or raise your hand like Kundis did, and then we'll make sure that we sort of pass on the talking stick, I would say. Before I move into this, I have one short poll that I would like to do. This is to get a little bit of an idea of the people who are in this space right now, and also that you have an idea of what kind of people are here. It's always a little bit difficult if you're digitally connected and not physically. So Paul is going to start a poll. If you can answer it, two questions, and then we have a little bit of an idea of who we all are. Should be quite easy. And we'll share the results in a little bit, so you have you can see what the rest is doing as well. 85% voted. All right, everyone voted. So Paul, if you can share the results. Most the biggest part of this group is an entrepreneur themselves, investors and knowledge workers come in second. And also quite a quarter of the group is intending to start a new business, probably a reason to find answers to the question, all right, where to start? Where can I make the most impact? So, all right, thank you, Paul. My co-host of today is Koen van Seijen. As I said, Koen, you have been doing over 120 interviews, I think you said, over 5 or 6 years. You've been in the game quite long, and you've talked to a lot of people. So I wanted to actually start with you in raising this question on what do you think and what would you say after these 120 interviews are the biggest problems, but also opportunities for venture building?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much, first of all, for organizing this. it's always nice to show up somewhere and not having to do all the background and all the organization. And I'm very happy, obviously, that Fresh got started after many, many discussions with Huub and Bart back in the day and over the last years. I think I've done a number of shout outs in the podcast that we need more venture builders while you were building your venture builder. So I'm very happy that it's public now and ventures are being built. So for me, I mean, for anybody that doesn't know, the journey we've been on is, I think we started interviewing now about 4.5 years ago. It feels a lot more, or maybe 5, I have to check. But it was very sporadic at the beginning. We just interviewed a few friends, interviewed a few people, honestly, for me to hang out with people virtually that were building or are building interesting things in the regen food and egg space, because I didn't know what I wanted to build myself. I'm not a farmer. I don't have the huge urge to start a farm, nor honestly the investor, because I don't have the wealth. So I really wondered, what can I do in this space? And I thought the best way is probably to hang out with people that are building things. And to do that, I had to interview them. And of course, I had to also to publish them, but it was not even part of the game. So we did that for a number of years. And since the last 2 or 3 years, we really brought some more structure to the table. And now we're releasing an episode a week and we're doing a number of series, and it really, really became a small media company. In terms of lessons learned, I think first one is the attention for soil. Of course, my bubble has grown, but really exploded over the last years, which is amazing. We need way more attention for the way we treat land, oceans, and basically our planet, and way more attention for the opportunities. And what we've seen, we sort of identified 4 themes, I think 1.5 or 2 years ago now, which are still very current, that we see huge challenges, also huge opportunities, not necessarily the easiest places to build things, but definitely in our mind, huge opportunities over the next decade or so. These are long-term games, so don't expect anything fast. But we see huge opportunities in food as medicine. So nutrient density, the measurement of how can we show that this tomato is different than that tomato? How can we show that connection between healthy soil, healthy produce, healthy gut systems, healthy people, and then ultimately healthy ecosystems? There's a lot being done. There's a lot of, luckily, grant capital moving into the space. Companies are claiming all kinds of things, but I think there's still a lot of space. Like, what are food companies looking in the future if we take food as medicine seriously? How it's going to look, I don't know. We're going to see a lot of changes, I think, over the next years. The other one, and Willemijn knows a lot more about that, is and also actually Tekla, landscape design. How do we bring this regen ag discussion and the regeneration of an hectare here, 10 hectares, 10,000, et cetera, to a landscape scale? How do we bring that discussion of bringing back rivers, stabilizing climate in certain areas? We need to talk at ecosystem level and landscape levels, because we're literally running out of soil. And we need a lot of innovative companies to do that. Technology, food companies that operate at a landscape level, that buy the full rotation. I literally had a discussion with Nestle, all people, yesterday. And they say, we're going to buy the full rotation, which is very interesting at a landscape level. And so people are thinking about it, but we need to look at a larger scale. Landscape is, or ecosystem or biome is really the operating principle we need to use, because otherwise we stay in very, very nice, but very, very small and marginal discussions. Then ecosystem service payments, super interesting as well. Very crowded at the moment. A lot of people are jumping on the carbon bandwagon, obviously. Still, I think a lot of space if you look at payments for biodiversity, payments for things that we all need, farmers can provide or land stewards, but we're currently, especially through food, not paying for. Of course, there's a subsidy train you can take, but it's very, very complicated. And we just released, did we release already? Anyway, an interview with a colleague of Willemijn on how to calculate returns at a landscape scale. And I would definitely see that as a piece as well. Like, how can you start seeing all the different flows of capital and non-financial returns that come off regenerative agriculture? And how do you pay? How do you get more money in the pockets of farmers? I think that's a central question. And then the fourth, transition finance. How do we finance all of these transitions? How do we help farmers to bridge those gaps, the yield gaps, the drops, et cetera, et cetera? How do we make sure food companies go through the transition of sourcing different ingredients, et cetera? There's a lot of innovative ways to travel time there, to bring things forward that we would like to see happening now. Planting trees is an example. They're an amazing investment, but it takes 7 to 10 or sometimes even more years. How do you finance that? That's a finance question, but somebody has to build a company to do that. And the fifth sort of theme that we've seen recently, or I'm getting very excited about, and that's why I'm so excited of the steward connection here, the steward ownership, is regenerative enterprises, who is not only very ambitious when it comes to building soil or rebuilding soil, but also extremely ambitious when it comes to everything else, all the uncomfortable questions around inequality, land access, profit share, racism, all the big questions agriculture forces us to ask, and we often don't. And I see some organizations taking that on, that head on, like very, very seriously, and I'm very happy about that. And we're planning with the podcast to follow them.
Thank you, Koen. That's quite a lot, as you like to say. That's quite a lot to unpack as well. But maybe already get a few other people involved as well. And again, please enter your own remarks, or as Willemijn does now, share resources with us in the chat as well, so we can get you guys involved. Maybe you mentioned Willemijn already, Koen. Maybe we can ask her to jump in, because you mentioned landscape design as well. And maybe Willemijn, you can briefly tell a little bit about what you are doing, who you are, and then I wonder also what your perspective is on this question. Like, what are the main problems, but also what are the opportunities that you see that we need to work on?
Yeah, so first of all, thanks for inviting me. I feel like you are really more an expert than I am, but I'll try to do my best to share some experiences. And it's great to see Tekla here. She's also part of our growing community of people working either on regenerative businesses or on landscape restoration, and there is a connection. So I work for Common Land. It's an Amsterdam-based organization engaged in enabling large-scale holistic landscape restoration, also built on regenerative businesses. So we believe, it can be business-driven landscape restoration. So you can actually restore soils and ecosystem functioning by doing business differently. So it can be different products also coming out of the landscape. This can be fiber, food, drinks. So it can be a lot of different things, and it's a really exciting space. So we're known for the four returns method. So it moves away from maximization of return on investment per hectare, so getting as much as you can out of the land in a short amount of time, towards maximization of interaction per hectare. So how can you create more diversity between people, between businesses, but also in terms of biodiversity? So bringing back diversity in all its shapes and forms to move away from this monoculture growth-oriented way of using land. And I think the challenges, so I think carbon is an opportunity and a challenge all in one, because it's really, if you want to measure carbon, for example, on a large scale, you're going to have to work with proxies, and it's going to be incomplete. So that article I just shared has a good analysis also of that. Plus, carbon is just one of the multiple things you can create, and actually you can also create financial streams around. So we are looking at that space and seeing what we want to do with it, but we also sort of don't believe the hype in a way. Sort of think from an ecosystem perspective. So how can you indeed reward land stewards for whatever they're performing on the land in terms of producing regeneratively? So that can be biodiversity oriented or carbon oriented or water quality. But just looking at it more holistically, not just running away with carbon and forgetting about the ecosystem. Nevertheless, it's also a huge opportunity. I mean, there is a lot of carbon that can be captured by soil and by different land practices. So definitely a beautiful development, but something to just be aware of. And I really recommend reading that article, although it takes an hour to read. And other challenges, I think a landscape approach in itself can be a bit challenging. And I think Tekla can also talk to that. It's just you are effectively engaging in system change. You are working in an ecosystem with a lot of people living there, using the land, infrastructural projects. So you have to deal with everybody in that landscape, and that's challenging. So we're trying to, also learn from the Theory U community and how you can engage in a system. It can be education, can be health system, but in our case, it's a landscape system. and engage in different types of conversations. So we know how to restore landscapes, basically. We know how you can restore ecosystem functioning. We know a lot more about how you can restore soils. But the tricky part is getting people to collaborate for longer periods of time. So we're working with a 20-year time frame minimum, which is basically one generation, because an ecosystem needs that time to be able to regenerate and create a new stable system, basically. But the trick is to get people to work collaboratively on longer periods of time, because often we speak different languages, we have different stakes, sometimes the funding runs dry. So how do you engage into deeper relationship building between these stakeholders for longer periods of time? And I'm realizing I'm going off on a rant, but I hope it's useful. So that's a second challenge, yeah.
Maybe because I like the ranting personally, okay. And maybe then we can, because you mentioned Tekla as well, and we can ask her her experience as well. But in this bringing together multiple stakeholders, and is there, why is that difficult? I mean, I have my ideas, but I would like to hear from your experience as well. Like, why is it so difficult to bridge?
I think because we're so used to compartmentalizing things. It's either you are either active in a value chain, or you are active in your own role in the municipality. So where everything is very siloed. So breaking through those silos and thinking from what others might also need in that same landscape or that same piece of land requires, giving in a little bit and not just thinking about your own stake. Also, what's challenging is the long-termism thing. So we are so used to projects, 3 years, 5 years, if you're lucky. And of course, from a business perspective, that it, longer term is can be either the obvious route or your, yeah, I don't know. The short-term, long-termism is interesting from a business perspective, but just sticking with it for a longer run, that's the challenging thing, because we don't have that horizon normally. We're so project oriented, short cycles, even in government, we have 4 year cycles of people being elected. And then once they know all about the topic and start to understand it, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, you don't want to have monopolies of, you know, politicians staying for too long, but it does create this short-termism. Yeah. Does that help?
Yeah. It does. I have a bunch more questions, but maybe let's touch a few more people and then we can engage in a broader conversation. So maybe Tekla, Willem, I mentioned you already. Maybe you could introduce yourself briefly as well and zoom in on a similar question, actually. What kind of problems do you see now? I listened to the podcast you did with Koen today, actually. You're facing quite a lot of challenges in general, I think, but what are specific problems you also see that might be transferable to different contexts as well?
Thanks, Bart. I'm Tekla, and I am a co-founder of Grounded. It's an organization, we're actually based in South Africa, and we work with farmers in Africa to help them switch to regenerative agriculture, and then we build businesses on the back of that, where we actually connect them to markets. I've been doing this now for about 7 years and encountered many challenges. I think maybe the first thing which I think is quite important to acknowledge is that ultimately regenerative agriculture is about farming with nature, and what we have been doing over the past, what, like 60 years or something, is farming against nature and more in a sort of linear, I don't know how to actually describe it in English, but not with nature, but it's a more linear approach where it's like, okay, this is the spray program for this particular farm, and you need to just execute this, and then you're going to kill all the pests which are on this land if you just follow exactly these steps. And this farming with nature requires a much deeper understanding of an entire system, which is actually specific to every single farm and every single circumstance where you are. So it's maybe we need to all acknowledge that this is extremely hard to do. And in particular, if you take it to a landscape approach, which you already hinted on, which makes this even more complex. So it's definitely not something which is easy. It's quite a beast. And therefore, it also takes more time to create the challenges. That's not to say that you cannot have like quick wins in the beginning. And it's like there's actually a lot that you can do relatively quickly and you'll see results. But it's also hard. So in the work that we do on the ground, there is just hurdle after hurdle after hurdle and unknown after unknown after unknown. And I think it's important that as a community, we talk about those things, because then we can actually learn and progress. Just like there has been a lot of science on the sort of conventional agricultural system, we need a lot more knowledge sharing and science on the regen system. And not only saying, this is great, please give us money. And I think maybe two other angles that I can take, like to build on what Koen was saying, like what are sort of venture opportunities. If I look at it more in grounded, we take more of a value chain approach. And I think there's quite a lot of focus on and initiatives happening on a farm level. So farmers switching to regenerative. And there's also quite a lot happening on the brand side. So brands claiming that they're going to be regenerative. Where I see two sort of gaps is one is what happens before the farm. So where does this farmer actually get his or her inputs? This has been a major hurdle for us. So regenerative seeds, organically certified seeds, what kind of microbial applications can you actually use, fungi that you want to actually grow, how you make the right kind of compost. So because farmers are used to actually getting consultants in who then sell them whatever kind of fertilizer or spray programs. But in the regenerative system, they have to do something different. They still have to use inputs, which they can often actually make themselves. But how to do that, there's a big opportunity there, I think. And then there is also an opportunity, I think, between the farmer and the brand, where this is a system, our food system is dominated by huge companies that pile all agricultural commodities on one heap and then ship them and transport them and make sure that everything tastes the same. Where there are massive opportunities, I think, to do this differently or to work from within those companies to change them so that products which have been produced regeneratively can also get to the brands that are looking for these ingredients. And then you can have more value transfer. Otherwise, you lose the value because everything just goes on the one heap and it's lost. This is an issue we are facing all the time. This is something we have to deal with.
Thank you very much. Super insightful already. Koen, maybe I don't know if you want to respond. I have a few questions, but you're always...
I see. Actually, Albert is asking, just in terms of a bit of background, what kind of crops are you dealing with in South Africa, Tekla? Just for people who have no idea what you're doing, just to give a bit of background when you say ingredients...
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, we don't do like fresh vegetables or something like that. We work with non-perishable high-value crops. So we're in essential oils and seed and vegetable oils. So those are like pressed. And herbal tea and spices. We're not only in South Africa, also in Zambia and in Tanzania. So it's a lot of these crops go for export markets.
And do you see the same issue that actually the Nestle person was discussing, that issue of as soon as you are applying regenerative approaches or practices, often crops, farmers start to grow different crops, and obviously they need to find markets for the different crops. Is that something you're saying, okay, we're also buying your three other crops, even though the cash crop is honeybush or is etc. Is that something you're figuring out how to buy the full rotation, as a quote that I think Dan Barber once quoted, but is that something you're working on, something you're seeing, or is that getting way too complicated, because then you have to deal with 3, 4, 5, in some cases 6, 7, 10 crops.
Yeah, what we try to do is build it on the back of what the farmers are already doing. And often actually the smallholder farmers that we're working with are already selling. They already have a range of different crops. So they'll have maybe some maize, maybe some spices, maybe some vegetables, and they'll sell a lot of the stuff into local markets. And then we can help them capture a higher value for instance, these spices that we can then actually export and get a premium for. So I think, yes, this is definitely key, is you want to find product market combinations for all these crops in the system. It's not something that necessarily we as Grounded are going to sit between the farmer and the market for all of those things, because some of them, they will actually be, ideally, they will be able to sell them off themselves into local markets. Yeah. But it's definitely something you need to take into account. If you let them grow crops which they can't sell themselves, it totally sucks, of course. Then they're super dependent, and they, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great bridge, actually. I see that Alfredo unmuted his video. I don't know how you say that, actually. Switched his video on. Alfredo, 123, welcome. I know you're multitasking. Very, very busy. Happy you're here. Can you talk a bit about that? Because that's in agroforestry systems. Obviously, you are dealing with multiple crops, especially as you're moving towards more regenerative practices. What do you see at that? You'll be dealing with a cash crop like cocoa or cash crop like coffee. And then what do you do with the other crops?
So thanks, thanks for having me and for inviting me. First of all, I would like to just jump in on what was just shared before answering your question. And I think, and I second totally what was the analysis that was just done on the supply chain and on the opportunities that can be found beside the pure play, let's say, investment at the farm level, or what the claims of the brands, especially on the organic agri inputs. I think that is an important opportunity, and us as 123, we created an incubator exactly for tackling these kind of challenges. And specifically, we are now launching an organic agri-input management company. Regarding your question, so when we set up agroforestry systems in our farms, yes, we do have our cash crop that is primarily either cocoa or coffee, but we do we rely on this cash crop in pairing it with other crops. That for us, the first main reason is the climate resiliency of the farm, and also having the possibility of with these other multi-cropping to have a more positive and more profitable first cash crop. So let's make an example that probably everybody already knows. But cocoa trees grow well in the shade, and so for achieving this result, we plant either coconut trees or native trees or bananas, and therefore we enrich our product array on one side, and on the other side, our cocoa grows better. And then obviously in the course of of the growth of the farm and on the field, the cropping system is managed, and then there's some changing and optimization. On what do we do with this with these other crops besides just having them in the system and helping us with our, let's say, first crop? A lot of our effort is now geared towards finding and signing sustainable offtake agreements with these brands that are claiming to want regenerative agriculture sourced foods. And we've been able to do it, for example, for our banana. So we have a good contract with a German supermarket chain. And we are now opening for example, coffee and coconut oil and all the byproducts of these crops. So does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And I have a follow-up question. First of all, can you just in one or two sentences, because I obviously realize we're talking to the in crowd here, what is 123? And then to briefly mention, because you sent something very interesting on the incubator, you're starting to build companies that are serving your farms. So what have you, you've launched two companies so far, what are you, and then what are you missing on that side? Like, what would you love that somebody launches?
Yes. Okay. So, in a couple of words, what is 123? 123 is an asset manager / operator German company that was founded in 2017. And so far, and it targets the management of funds for institutional investors. So our anchor investor is a group of German pension funds, and we together together with them and other investors, we were successfully able to basically have more than $500 million committed to our agroforestry systems and the management of our farms and forestry projects. More or less half of that is actually invested. We focus on agroforestry systems, climate change mitigations, local communities, and social impact. And so we both start farms from scratch with a greenfield approach. Our specialty is again cocoa in Latin America, and we have now 13 projects in 7 countries in especially in Latin America, and we focus at with projects at scale. So we do not usually do small farms, but we operate on significant scales. Also because of the nature of our investors, but we do also engage with smallholder farmers with programs around our let's say big farms. And this is obviously a pure play regenerative agriculture and agroforestry investment or strategy, if you want to call it. We soon realized that there was, shared before, a need let's call it the value chain or the supply chain that goes around the what is being done specifically on the farms. And therefore, we decided to launch this 123 Impact Incubator that so far has launched two startups. One is a fertigation company that has already been successfully funded in the first year, and now it's tackling projects that need assistance in designing irrigation systems that bring a lot of efficiency to the farms and allow for the applications of input in the fertigation system, and just as spraying or direct input. And the second one is instead an agri inputs management advisor. Let's call it like this. It wants to act as a one stop shop for agri inputs management. Usually, again, we're starting from our experiences. So most of these ventures are born trying to give answers to, let's say, market failures that we observe in our big farms. So usually they are tailored for large scale farming operations. And what we are trying to achieve with this one is instead helping these big farms and big operations to switch to a more organic and regenerative agriculture approach. What we are looking for next, we identified more or less 5 major opportunities. Among these, there's definitely precision agriculture, so drones and GIS mapping. And this is probably one of the ventures that we are probably going to launch sooner than others. And as well, data management and all this, but this is still far off for us in the, at the moment.
Thank you so much for that. Sorry, Bart, I went down a rabbit hole.
That's good. It's good. Thank you also, Alfredo. Great to meet you. We haven't properly met. I've heard about you from Koen. I actually also want to get back a little bit to Tekla, what she was saying, because there were sort of three things that you said. The first one was about the knowledge sharing part, and I tend to hear that more often, I would say. So, and maybe the rest can chip in on that as well. And you say that there's a sort of a lack of knowledge sharing, or we should do it more as well. Maybe you can get a bit more specific on your journey, in what moments you've done things that you would have need, well, maybe experiences from others, and what would be also a good way to actually get that access. Elaborate a little bit further on what's missing there and what we should deliver there.
Yes, there's so much knowledge that you need if you do this, like if you actually do this on the ground. I think maybe the first thing you need, like that I wish I would have known, is that it is flipping hard. and that is, I think, something that is quite useful to know before you start. We were told that this was easy. Like I had read about it and I'd seen all the nice movies, like, you know, from brown to green. And I thought, okay, this is fantastic. I'm going to actually just do this. But it turned out it's a little bit harder. You can go from brown to green, I noticed, quite quickly if you have good rain, but that's another, exactly. That sometimes that's actually a challenge. What's hard on a farm level, I think, is that what I hinted on already is farmers need to acquire a different kind of set of knowledge to be able to operate their farm regeneratively. And so you need to look at the soil differently. You need to understand what kind of life there actually is in the soil. You need to analyze that. You need to then fix for things which are out of balance. So if there are too many nematodes, you need to find a way to fight that without like killing them all and killing all the other life in the soil, and it's those kinds of things which are actually very difficult. It's, or for instance, deciding what kind of cover crops are you gonna actually plant. What does this particular piece of soil need in terms of nutrients, and then which crops can we grow here given the soil and the water availability, and sometimes the land maybe floods or it's very dry or whatever, you know. So it's, there is just a lot of knowledge that goes into actually doing this on a farm level. And I think then on the back of that, what is also really hard is that once you then have all the farming elements right, you need to then get a product that you can get to a market for which you need to have an entirely different kind of skill set. And especially if you have new products that you want to get into new markets, for instance, that we did with essential oils, you need to understand, how do I get a good quality essential oil? So you need to do product development tests, chemical analyses, whatever. And then you need to understand what are actually the requirements of the different buyers, who are these buyers, how can we access them, etc., which is a totally different kind of skill set. So there's just a lot of, I don't know if this kind of answers your question.
Well, I think especially on the first part that you, and maybe Willemijn, I'm not sure if you've been involved, but you're talking about like what do you actually need to do. And I think Commonland actually build a sort of a toolkit that you can sort of say what kind of conditions you are, what kind of context you are, and you can roughly get some information on, for example, cover crops and what to work with. So on the one hand, I see sort of twofold thing, and maybe someone else can chip in on this, and maybe Willemijn. But on the one hand, it's like almost Google it, like, is there an information center, if I understand you correctly. On the other hand, it also relates to, and I saw some questions coming in as well, like the actual experts or the independent agronomists or people that can actually help you and maybe also help you on the on that input side. And yeah, well, both of these challenges, is that a correct read, like that you need both of them, like the expert, but also the knowledge database that you can use?
Well, I shared a link to a short story, which was called The Six Biggest Lessons Learned on Regenerative Agriculture, which is basically us trying to capture the knowledge in the network of partners like Grounded, similar in other countries, and how they, what they've picked up on the road to regenerative agriculture as part of a landscape initiative, basically. And one thing that we found was that there's a huge science practice gap. So like you mentioned, there's a lot of research backing conventional agriculture up, but there's no equivalent amount backing regenerative up. Of course, you can look at agroecological research. There's probably more there, but still it's a huge gap. And also there's a mismatch of if let's say you were to pilot with a group of farmers different practices, then it's hard to find scientists that can deal with that level of complexity, because you're not just looking at two or three elements, you're looking at a whole system. So that also, so that was one big thing in terms of knowledge gap. And there was another one. Yeah, so interestingly, we saw that farmer-centric networks kind of were the way to go. For farmers to exchange with each other, they have a lot of knowledge already, but just being able to experiment together and share knowledge about that, visit each other's farms frequently, invite expert speakers that can help you along that sort of learning journey you're on, because once you understand this, you also want to understand that, and then you want to understand that. So it's like it never stops, but you just need to pull in the right people at the right time in that farmer-centric network, kind of. So that's from a sort of a helicopter view, that's what I saw happening. So the tool you mentioned, so we're trying to develop a couple of sort of general tools that can help sort of move towards that holistic thinking towards, for example, your regenerative business. So we have one tool where you can look at your farm or estate, if you have one, from a sort of four returns perspective. So what are the sort of things you can take into account when you look at your farm? We also have another tool, a business model canvas, just the old school business model canvas, but then sort of twisted a little bit more towards a holistic view and taking a landscape also into account. But it's by no means perfect, but it's just us trying to sort of pin it down and make it tangible. But feedback's always welcome.
Thank you, Willemijn. We also got a bunch of questions in the chat, Koen. If you
want me to unpack them very quickly. The first one, I think, of Chris is it's a very good question. Why are we not ready? Why are the organizations we know not doing 20 million, but a billion, etc.? I had a discussion on that yesterday. My feeling is we're too early, where we don't have the proof of concept like Willemijn is sharing, like at a landscape level, at hundreds of farms doing all kinds of different products at a scale that we can get $1 billion or more, or a lot of money, let's say, because for that you need institutional investors and they need to see a long track record. Like the first investments in renewable energies were also not institutional investors. They were obviously subsidized based, but still it was a slow start before we got to the level where we are now. So my feeling is really we're going to see these examples being built over the next years, and all of us will probably feel like they're too small, but they are already thinking about the next fund, or they are thinking about their next 10x time, what they need to raise to really make a dent in the Midwest, talking about med agriculture. But we're still figuring out the recipes. We're still figuring out really, we're so early on, like we have to, like Tekla says, the whole value chain or the whole value web has to be redesigned and refigured out in terms of ingredients, in terms of expertise. And coming to a question of Paul, farmer consultants, it really depends who pays them. If the input companies pay them, we know what kind of advice they give. And so that's a whole other business opportunity in terms of education for farmers. Very tricky, very difficult, but there's a huge need to have independent farmer consultants. So capital is working on it, others are working on it. We need to be able to make sure that farmers have an independent advice that they can trust that is not sold to them by an input company. Because if the incentives are aligned like that, we know what happens. Just like Shell is going to tell you, we're going to help save petrol, which obviously we all know is not going to happen. Which is not because they're bad, it's just because their business model is different. So I feel we're really early on. We should really crawl before we're going to run or we're going to stand. And we are in the crawling phase in many phases. In many other places, not necessarily, but as a system, as a movement, we're super, super, super early. And we just don't have, we cannot point to 2-3 things that already raised a lot of money, have huge successes or huge acreage, et cetera. Like New Foundation Farm still has to start. And they're raising now as we speak. And they're only raising, only because it's a lot of money, but 20 million. And Perennial, we all see as a huge success, but they only raised 10. We have to build the foundations first. And these are pieces, potentially pieces of the foundation. So I hope that answers it. Alice, I saw a question on the cultural and socioeconomic. Access is an enormous question. Like, how do we make sure this is not, again, another elite game like many of the other food movements have been, farm to table or organic in many examples, et cetera. How we're going to do that without some extra flow of capital in terms of subsidies or is going to be very, very tricky. I hope we're going to move the food discussion to medicine and then suddenly we open up a whole different discussion in terms of insurance, in terms of what am I willing to spend on health and not just on feeding myself. But that's a long, long walk we need to do there. So I don't know the easy answer there. At the moment, it's not as accessible as it should be, and cheap calories and processed calories are way more accessible. So that's a very difficult. And there also, there's a huge education, like we are what we eat, literally. But most people or a lot of people don't see it. If you see what a lot of people throw in their supermarket basket, when you are at your local supermarket, you'll be shocked, or you are shocked probably, because most of it is simply not food. I mean, Nestle did an internal research, which came out, unfortunately, for them in the Financial Times, I'll put a link in below, that 65% of their products can never be claimed healthy. And so they have huge issues of with the new traffic light system of is it green or not? Like, can it be named healthy? In France and Australia, they're already doing that. Most of their products are simply too salty and too sweet. And so they know that, but how are you going to change a behemoth like that doing, I checked it yesterday, 93 billion a year. So cheap calories are cheap and not very cheap if you take into, of course, true cost accounting could potentially fix some of that. But it's a very difficult one. How do we keep this accessible to all, especially to the people that need it most, that are eating the worst food at the moment? And because we potentially all here on the call are already shopping locally, are already making choices differently. So there's not too much to win, honestly, when you look at us.
Yeah, maybe I can chip in there. That's also something on a farmer level that's, I think, relevant to think about, because I think most of the pioneering examples that you see on regenerative farms that get everything right are people that also had the cash to spend. And this is something which is very frustrating for some of the farmers that we've been working with, because then you point them to those examples. You say, look, you can, here, it's possible. And then they're like, yeah, okay, but this guy had a shitload of money and that's how he made it possible, you know? So those examples can be inspiring to outsiders, but they can be super frustrating and actually off-putting to farmers who are just common farmers and who have to make ends meet and who are like, yeah, but that's just unattainable for me. So then you have to go like smaller steps, things which are immediately interesting to them, like reducing input costs by making their own compost tea, for instance, which immediately can fertilize their crops and they can see the result. So those are things that we are also working on. It's like, how can you make this transition affordable to farmers who have very little to spend without having to always resort to massive subsidies, for instance? I think that's a very exciting thing to think about. Like, how can you make this show a poor farmer that a small investment can lead to an immediate return? Which I think is possible in some cases, like maybe not for the full transition, but in many cases, I think there you can actually do things there as well.
Yeah, thank you both.
Thank you. We have a bunch of more questions, but maybe, I don't know, Alice or Chris, Koen answered your questions. I'm not sure if any of you wants to respond or has additional questions.
Well, I would jump in. Yeah, I would ask, I want to poke around, Koen, your thoughts on new foundation farms, related also to what Tekla said about having a lot of money and being able to put into a farm this decent amount of capital, and then wanting to showcase or demonstrate regenerative agriculture as the way to go for other farmers to copy in a nearby location. Is there, do you see evidence of that, or do you see kind of potential challenges there? And I'd also like to, if possible, briefly hear a little bit from Tekla about some of the kind of more specific challenges that you face, whether it's expanding the amount of farmers under that you're working with, or expanding to another geographical location, kind of the specific things that are really bottlenecks for you in that context.
You want to go first, Tekla?
No, you can go.
So on new foundation farms, just for anybody who doesn't know, they are raising 20 million, buying 1,000 acres in the UK, potentially scaling that a number of times and being a fully regenerative, fully integrated regenerative food enterprise, or agri-food enterprise, as they call it. We're following them with the podcast because I find them extremely ambitious, a very interesting team, and doing things very differently, like Chris is saying. And I'm interested because they do things at a certain scale, or they are going to try to do things at a certain scale, which maybe unlocks certain things that that an individual farmer can't, meaning building a proper food brand, selling into the city, having a farm shop that operates year round and actually drives a lot of the value back to the land, having more than 100 people on staff and operating at a scale that there is an economy of scale. Like, let's not deny that. It's a very different thing, obviously, because they start with a sort of clean slate. They will buy the land. They can do whatever they want with that. They will never sell it. So they have a very long-term, at least, plan. Let's see what they will be following that. So I'm very curious about that because it shows a different operating system or a different model at a different scale that, according to them, makes sense in the UK. Very context specific, obviously. So let's see. I don't know. I think once you have that brand standing, you can sell a lot of the food through the food brand and proper marketing, proper design. If you see their data room, they thought about this a lot, and they have a lot of experience with selling food. I think you can absorb a lot of other food from the area, from farmers that are nearby, and make this transition a lot easier for people that don't want to. Like I said in the chat, every farmer needs a market, that don't want to set up their own food brand. They don't necessarily want to do that because you don't want to wear 15 different hats, and they want to have access to the best technology that you can have if you share it with a major hub like that. So I think if you offer a good market and have a good sense of the quality and the regenerative practices, then this could be very interesting. Could fail completely in a couple of years and we look back like this was a bad shot. But I think we need to be ambitious. We need to be bold in the current sense. We need to question a lot of things about agriculture. And one of them is the single family farm with a small farm shop. And we all hope that will save the world. Because I think there are a lot of issues with that. So we need professional organizations and companies as well running some of these. And so let's see where they get.
Cheers.
Yeah, I will go quickly. I think on the model, the model farm thing, and then having other farmers copy that is, I think, very often challenging, because in the model farm, you, like I just mentioned, you then invest a lot of resources, and then for the other farmers surrounding that farm can sometimes be difficult to get to that. So that's one comment. In terms of barriers to scale for grounded, for us, the success in our model lies in making it successful for the farmers, because that will allow us to scale. So if we can make this work financially for farmers that we work with, then we can also scale. And barriers there, I think there are two, which we are now addressing. One is money, because you often need to have some kind of capital to get this whole thing started. So we're looking at raising our own fund within Grounded to be able to scale more rapidly and have a little bit more leeway, that we can actually choose areas which we think are interesting and get started. And the other thing is market access. And for that, we are an access to the right kind of market. And for that, we are launching a platform, hopefully next week, which is geared towards giving regenerative suppliers access to niche brands. So kind of bridging that gap that I was talking about earlier, who are looking for regeneratively produced ingredients, and then hopefully getting those suppliers a better price. And that will hopefully also allow us to scale more rapidly, because then we can onboard all kinds of different suppliers who we can then provide support to get better at regenerative agriculture. So we see that market link as a sort of scaling mechanism, so we can reach many more suppliers than we are currently doing.
Nice. Thanks for that. By the way, that's very exciting. Two nice initiatives that you're kind of folding into that. That's very, I'm looking forward to see that platform. I wish you guys the best.
Yes, we're crunching at the moment. Well, not me, as you can see, but my colleagues. yeah.
All right. Yeah, thank you, Tekla. We're also almost already at the end. It's a 1 hour conversation. We're going to do this way more often, maybe zoom in on specific parts of what we addressed today, even to get in a little bit more detail. Maybe Danielle, to mention you, Koen, you responded. Danielle, you mentioned, if I say your name right, Danielle Cesano, correct me, please. You mentioned a few things. Maybe it's a good closing remark as well, because you mentioned a few ideas that you think are going to be relevant in the space, and maybe Koen, you can respond on it as a final remark.
So, well, basically, just present myself. I'm Daniele Cesano, founder of Adapta. It's a startup that works in Brazil on regenerative agriculture. I currently have joined the IDB, the Inter-American Development Bank. I'm helping them invest part of their fund in a larger portfolio on regenerative agriculture. We're creating a green hub to invest basically with the best, largest multinational companies in Latin America in regenerative agriculture. And I'm also a farmer. So I own a small farm here close to Rio de Janeiro. What I see is that a lot of people usually, they talk about transitional finance, but for me, this is a second bit, is a key. If you don't have a system to manage the transition at scale, then you cannot have transitional finance, because transitional finance is a scale issue. And then we have companies like 123 that they actually have the expertise in own house, that they've developed their own system. But how many companies do we need to create to develop this sort of system? So I think that developing a clear mechanism that parameterizes these processes and manages the transition at scale, that will be actually very important. Because when you do that, you start collecting data, and then you're gonna have artificial intelligence, and then you're gonna have all the satellite data, you know, with carbon. Regen Network is doing a great thing with satellite images for monitoring carbon, which can be linked to blockchain. You can have traceable products with traceable impacts, and ultimately we came up with a marketplace online platform that eventually can substitute current trading structures. You can actually, and that's in my opinion, that's where we have to go. Create trading mechanisms, large scale, that are gonna sell tradable impacts and tradable product with tradable impacts. And I think that's when we're actually gonna start working at the landscape level. So, you know, this should be a little bit my take on how I actually see the market evolving.
Thank you so much, Daniela. Good to see you. And I think we're on top of the, or not on top of the hour, on the bottom of the hour. So, Bart, I will give it back to you.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be built here. Almost every piece of the value chain has to be rebuilt. So we better get to work.
I think so as well. I'm going to wrap it up for today. First of all, thank you very much all for coming. As I said in the beginning, we recorded the session. So I will follow up with all of you. I'll try to capture some of the links in this chat as well. Make sure that is in an email together with the registration so you can watch it again. We are currently with Fresh working hard on this mission, trying to get more teams working on these challenges. So if you know people who want to work in this space, especially we are starting up a cohort at the end of this year, trying to build these new organizations. So also on the input side, like ideas or problems that you run into, but especially on the talent side currently, we are very much open for people that want to build new ventures in this space. So yeah, please share. We will have a next event actually on the 7th of July, which is a Fresh Talks around a similar subject, but we will invite probably three different pioneers in the space to tell more on a specific use case that we can dive into. This is more of an open conversation, and probably Koen and I will host another conversation like this at the end of July. Let's see how it goes. If you have any ideas on maybe a more focused discussion or topics that you would like to get into in this conversation arena, I would say, or you would like to have some speaking time, please reach out to us. You can either email me or do it via LinkedIn. But yeah, let's get this conversation going. I think there's a lot more than we could cover today. And especially also thanks for Willemijn and Tekla for being here and sharing your story. So thank you very much. And I hope to see you the 7th of July.